Every year, on your birthday, right at midnight, you travel through time to inhabit your body at a different point of your life for exactly 1 year. Then you leap to another random age you haven't lived before. Could be older, could be younger. You're physically and mentally healthy, but you're experiencing your adult life out of order. Una lowered the letter and stared up at an ad for a storage company. The train's motion shook her down to her bones, as if she were made of glass and would shatter to pieces at any moment. "Now, please, let me wake up now." But the train continued rattling on its tracks, and she continued being jostled by people sitting on either side of her during turns and stops. When the train went above ground, the passengers took out small, flat devices, the likes of which she'd never seen, and began tapping on and speaking into them. This isn't the 80s. The cold hadn't woken her. The noisy subway hadn't woken her. And her surroundings were painfully tangible, despite her wishes to the contrary. No more denial. This isn't a dream. Deep breath in, deep breath out. Una tried to check the time, but found she wasn't wearing a watch. A flash of color on the inside of her wrist made her pull up her sleeve. She gasped and revealed a tattoo, an hourglass with swirls of galaxies in place of sand, a ribbon across its base spelling out MDCR. She brought her wrist in for a closer look. When did I get this? What do the letters stand for? M for her mother, Madeline. D for Dale. C for her father, Charles. What about the R? Perhaps the letter would offer more clues. She resumed reading. I'm sure you're bursting with questions, and I'll explain a few things, but you'll have to discover the rest yourself. I won't be able to protect you from all the bad surprises, but I don't want to ruin the good ones for you either. There's this popular modern expression, no spoilers. It's a warning not to give away key plot points or endings in movies, TV shows, or books. That's how I feel about our mixed-up life. I don't want to give away too many spoilers. It might take the fun out of living it. That's why I don't keep diaries. Instead, I try to write a letter at the end of each year to prepare you for the next as best as I can. You have a lot of incredible things to look forward. Backward? Too. But this first leap will be rough. To make things easier, I've laid out some guidelines. I won't call them rules because as much as you think you love rules, you also kind of hate them. Some of these might seem odd or annoying, but you need to trust me. After all, I'm future you. Here's some good news. You're rich. I'm talking ridiculously buy anything, do anything you want, rich. This is thanks to savvy investing and some educated sports bets. Croeso winning 1983's Florida Derby at 85-1 odds was a great start. So you can still get a Soho loft if you want. But in the meantime, that Park Slope mansion you woke up in is yours. As is a 9-figure bank balance and a stock portfolio you must manage carefully. You'll need to memorize a lot of information in order to make/sustain your fortune, since whatever you learn in future years, you retain when you travel to the past. It can get complicated, though, which is why you have the binder. Kenzie will show you when you're ready. More on him later. Let's get into these guidelines. 1. You can't tell anyone about the time travel. Mom and Kenzie know. That's it. Right now, convincing anyone else would be tricky to impossible, and a doctor might sooner put you in a padded room than believe it. It'll take a while for you to believe it yourself. So for now, better to process quietly. This rule applies only to 2015. We'll have a little more wiggle room in other years. 2. Don't get too rich. If you make too much money, you might get unwanted attention, either from the IRS, the SEC, or people looking to take advantage. especially if you're mentioned in Forbes' list of wealthiest people. These days, that means keeping your fortune to under a billion. Yes, billionaires are now a thing. And less than that in earlier decades. It means giving to charity and making some bad investments on purpose from time to time. 3. Avoid publicity. This applies to every leap. You're a philanthropist, but the last thing you need is people sniffing around. So don't draw too much attention to yourself or your money. Kenzie helps you find good causes and can show you how to make donations while keeping a low profile. 4. Try to avoid having your picture taken so you won't know what you look like year to year. Again, no spoilers. Easier said than done these days, but do your best. If you can't avoid it, don't keep any photos taken after 1982. The one in your study from Dale's party is an exception. Una's stop was announced before she could read the rest. She stuffed the letter back in her pocket and hurried out of the station. As she walked, she refused to button her coat against the brutal wind, refused to acknowledge that this was really her coat, that this was really her life. With each step, threads of confusion wove into a thick coil of determination. As soon as I find Dale, we'll make sense of this together. This Bensonhurst wasn't too different from the version she remembered. Some new storefronts, a bagel shop, a laundromat, a nail salon. But as she turned off Bay Parkway, the sand and earth-colored brick apartment buildings and two-family houses looked the same. She was infused with desperate optimism as she hurried up Dale Street. It was the same house. Mostly. Same house. Different trimmings. The tiny front yard, once sparing rose bushes, had been replaced with a single blocky hedge. The black, wrought iron stair railing now looked as if they were made of silver pipe. And the front door, formerly crimson, had been painted brown. No lights on inside, but Una still rang the bell. Lightly at first, then with more insistence. The door swung open. A short Asian man with rumpled gray hair squinted at her.
"Who are you? Why are you here?"
Una's legs grew wobbly, and she put a hand on the front of the house for support.
"I'm looking for Dale D'Amico."
"Nobody here by that name. You have the wrong house."
She pressed her palm into the brick's sharp grain, took in staccato breaths.
"Do you know when the D'Amicos moved out? Where I could find them?"
"I've never heard of them. I've been living here 10 years. Please go away now."
He closed the door in her face. An ambulance wailed in the distance as Una collapsed on the top step, wheezing. Shallow breaths wouldn't satisfy her hungry lungs. The wind picked up, rattled through skeletal branches of nearby trees, yet she still couldn't take in enough air. Finish reading the letter. 5. Trust Kenzie. He may be a stranger to you now, but I've known him for years. He's more than your personal assistant. He's a loyal confidant. Younger than you, but wiser in many ways, and just plain fun to be around. He'll help more than you can imagine. 6. Don't trust technology. Think of it as your fair-weather friend. Learn to use computers, smartphones, and tablets. Kenzie will teach you. You can find a vast amount of information on the internet about anything, anyone. It's awesome, but don't get carried away. Also, try to avoid social media. Don't get too attached to these modern conveniences, because next year you might have to live without them. Those are the main things you need to know for now, except Dale. This is the hardest part. Even after all these years, it hurts to think about. Dale had a stroke. Young. I'm so sorry, but he's gone. Please don't look up his obituary. In fact, it's better if you don't look up information on anyone you know. But you still have Mom. You'll see her tomorrow. She's fine. Healthy.
has lots of boyfriends, takes lots of vacations. Hard to keep up with sometimes. She's living her best life. That's all she wants for you, too. I'll stop here. Take some time to grieve and process, but don't drown in the depression. You'll get through this. Trust me. It's me. Just take it one year at a time. Love, me. P.S. You're probably wondering about the tattoo. All in good time. Una's fingers cramped from holding the letter so tightly. She wanted to tear it up and throw the pieces into the wind. Maybe that would make it less real. Instead, she refolded the letter and returned it to the envelope. None of this is happening. A youngish couple laughed as they climbed the steps to the house next door. Happy New Year, they called out to her before going inside. Fuck the New Year. Fuck everything. A black sedan pulled up, and its driver gave two short taps on the horn. Kenzie. Una took leaden steps down to the car. Her bones felt like struck tuning forks. How was it possible to feel so heavy, yet so hollow?
Thank God, he said once she was in the passenger seat. You must be frozen solid. No hat, no gloves, coat all unbuttoned.
He turned up the heat. I'm not cold at all, Una said.
What's that? I can't hear you over your chattering teeth.
As Kenzie drove, he kept looking over at her but said nothing. Not until he parked the car.
Are you all right? Dumb question. Of course you're not all right. What can I do?
Teach me about the internet. And social media. Fuck 2014, Una, too.
Now?
Kenzie's hands fluttered like small, panicked birds.
It's late, and right now.
Please. Chapter 4.
You sure you don't want to start this in the morning?
Kenzie punched in the code to disable the security alarm.
Yeah. I'm sorry to make you work so late, and on a holiday.
Warm, lily-scented air greeted Una as she crossed the threshold.
No sorries necessary. This isn't a 9-to-5 gig. I'm around whenever you need me. It's not about that. More that this is a lot.
I live in this huge house all by myself? Her boots clicked against black and white checked marble as she circled the foyer in a daze.
Right now, yeah. I mean, I'm here a lot. You have a sweet home office setup. And you fixed up one of the guest bedrooms for me to stay over whenever. You're a cool boss like that. But I have my own place in Cobble Hill.
He followed her as she wandered down the hall toward the kitchen.
It's only a couple miles away, so if you wanted to take the rest of the night to, you know, absorb everything, I could come back first thing, bring you a soy latte.
No thanks. Whatever that is, it sounds gross. Maybe some coffee, though?
If people still drink coffee in...
Wow. She entered the kitchen, which managed to be both lavish and cozy. Mint green cabinets were complemented by chrome appliances and monochromatic granite counters. A breakfast bar and butcher block island sectioned off the kitchen from the dining area.
I know, right? Martha Stewart would cut a bitch for a kitchen like this. Which is a compliment. Let me make the coffee.
We had coffee makers back in the 80s, you know. It's this one, right?
Right, but...
Kenzie, I didn't grow up in the Middle Ages. If you could just show me where the coffee and filters are. The annoyance in her voice faded as she scrutinized the sleek appliance's unfamiliar buttons.
And where they go. It doesn't take filters, it takes K-cups. They're like individual coffee pods.
At her bewildered stare, he offered a calm smile.
It's easy. But how about you let me do it tonight so we can focus on internet stuff? Coffee 101 can wait.
Sure. Shrugging, she dropped her bag on a counter and sat at the kitchen island, concentrating on the granite's speckled pattern to avoid the blurred jumble of her thoughts. After he made them coffee, Kenzie laid out three slim rectangular devices before her.
Phone, tablet, laptop.
Pointing at the phone, she said. Well, at least I know what that is. Though it's a lot different from the ones I used.
It's also a computer. They're all computers. You ever use one of those?
She shook her head.
Let's focus on the laptop for now.
He flipped open the MacBook and began to type.
How can it work if it isn't plugged in? Wireless technology. It's a beautiful thing.
With a flourish, he turned the computer toward Una. On the screen was a video of a tabby cat in a blue satin shirt playing the keyboard.
Behold the internet.
After a quick and dirty primer on the World Wide Web, he let her browse. But she kept accidentally closing out of windows and clicking on random hyperlinks. Frustration mounted on both sides.
For now, I think it's gonna be easier if you just tell me what you're looking for and let me search for you,
Kenzie said.
Let's start with Dale. I want to know when he died.
And how? Staccato clicks as Una drummed her nails against granite.
Didn't your letter mention that?
The how, yeah, but I don't believe it.
Young people don't die of strokes. I don't think 2014 you would have lied about that.
His fingers edged closer to hers, but she pulled back her hand.
I want to know for sure. And I want the exact date of his death.
The tone was meant to be stern, but her voice cracked with the threat of tears.
Okay, I'll look him up. But even if I find the obituary, it may not mention the cause of death.
It didn't, but it did have his date of death. February 27th, 1984.
He was only 20,
Una whispered, an ache in her throat.
He would have been someone great, but he never got to be anything.
She wiped at her wet face. Kenzie exhaled audibly and slid over a box of Kleenex.
I'm so sorry. This is why you weren't supposed to.
I don't care what I'm supposed to do. 2014 Una doesn't rule my life. I do. And I want to know what happened to everyone. All of my friends.
Then let me make us more coffee.
Once they were armed with refills, Kenzie took his place at the computer with a resigned hunch.
Who's next?
Pamela Lipscomb. Her childhood best friend went on to Harvard Law School, worked as an assistant district attorney in New York, and ended up a federal judge.
I always knew Pam would make it big.
Look at this. She was even shortlisted for the Supreme Court in 2010. And her daughter's an overachiever, too. Ranked one of the top 20 chess players in the world. Somewhat bolstered by her friend's success, Una nodded at the screen. Let's look up Wayne Sumter. The former early dawning bassist now lived in Baltimore, owned a private security company, was married to a petite redhead, and had two grown sons.
How is all this personal stuff so easy to find? She asked. Believe it or not, people post a lot of it themselves. Social media is complicated. It's like people live their private lives in public now.
Una tilted her head at the Facebook photo of Wayne on the beach with his family.
So, ordinary people act like they're famous? And many of them actually become famous for nothing. Don't get me started on celebrity culture. Who's next?
Corey Balcharak. Early Dawning's former drummer was twice divorced, no kids, ended up in real estate, and was in the middle of serving an 8-year sentence in a federal prison for embezzlement. Oh my God. Horrified, She leaned in to get a closer look at the screen.
That can't be him.
But the orange jumpsuit he wore in the news photo was eerily similar to the one she'd just seen him in at the party. And even with smoothed back hair and the addition of wire-rimmed glasses and a grooved forehead, the resemblance to his younger self was undeniable. But he was a good guy. A sweet dork, even if he was kinda dumb. I can't imagine him being a criminal.
Considering he got caught, he's obviously not a very smart one.
I can't even picture him working in an office. He was all about having crazy hair and playing the drums. She saw a flash of his quirky grin, his sweat-drenched face after rehearsal.
Does that mean nothing came of the band?
Look up Early Dawning opening up for Factory 12. While the latter went on to massive success, there was nothing about the 1983 tour mentioning the former. Nothing in any other search results.
Does that mean I chose London? Did the band break up because of me?
Una rubbed her bleary eyes.
Maybe that's enough for tonight,
Kenzie said.
No way. I might as well know about everyone else.
Eventually, it all became a blur of careers, marriages, divorces, children, grandchildren, diseases, and in a few more cases, early death. These people were supposed to be extraordinary, yet most ended up with mundane, marginally successful, or flat-out tragic lives. Aside from Pam, none of the others had accomplished anything truly great.
What about me?
Pages of results filled the screen. Websites, blogs, and social media profiles from around the world. Melbourne's Una Lockhart was a tattooed vegan with three kids. Cleveland's Una Lockhart was in college and collected antique board games. Oslo's Una was biracial and photographed reindeer.
None of those are me, she said. I didn't think my name was so common.
It isn't. I pay for special services to create fake Una pages to flood the internet. Makes it tougher to find the real you, and easier to bury any info we can't erase. We're careful about you keeping a low profile. Sometimes you use aliases.
And I've lost touch with all of them? All my friends?
She stared down at the laptop's keyboard, the letters swimming before her.
I must be so lonely.
There was a loaded pause before Kenzie replied.
You form other friendships over the years, and you've gotten a lot closer with your mom. For what it's worth, I'm here too.
Right then, it wasn't worth much, but it was better than nothing.
Thank you for...
Her hand wove through the air, unable to pluck out the right words.
Just thank you. I think that's enough for tonight. You can stay over if you want.
There was a tremor in her voice.
Of course. I'll show you your room. We should try to get some rest.
Yeah.
Though how could she sleep? The new information coursed through her head like cars on a busy freeway. But when Kenzie led her to a bedroom dominated by a chrome, four-poster bed piled high with pillows, she slid beneath the covers, curled up into a ball, and dropped right off. It would have been a small solace to dream of Dale, her friends, that mirrored basement, to return to 1982 for even a little while, before she knew how the story ended for all of them. But her sleep was a deep, inky void. Una woke up after a few hours, oddly rested. Early morning's pale yellow light illuminated the room. She blinked at the ceiling.
I need to tell NYU if I'm going to London. I need to tell the band if I'm going on tour. I need to decide.
Except it was the wrong room. Instead of the popcorn ceiling of her teenage bedroom, or the tangled wires suspended over Dale's bed, above her was an ornate tin ceiling.
Shit.
there was nothing to decide. She was in 2015. Una got out of bed, still in last night's skirt and sweater, eager for a fresh set of clothes. Is this really my room? She took cautious steps around the bedroom, like a guest snooping in someone else's house. Too nervous to touch anything, the nightstands resembling aluminum cubes, the glass shelves lined with silver vases, each containing a single violet calla lily, the iridescent lavender walls. A small display case in one corner of the room bore the only personal traces. It was filled with colorful knickknacks, a pyramid inside a snow globe, a porcelain Venetian mask, a model car made of crimson crystal, a Fabergé egg, a glass igloo, dozens of other items. Gifts? Souvenirs? Above the display case was the anniversary wristwatch from Dale, mounted and framed. Why is it behind glass? I should be wearing it. A desire to break the glass rose within her, only to be extinguished as the answer came. It's too precious. She turned away and refocused on finding a change of clothing. Only there were no dressers or wardrobes in the minimalist room. There were three doors, though. One opened to a hallway and the rest of the house. The second revealed a bathroom done in creamy marble and mother of pearl. The third led to a humongous walk-in closet. It housed a wardrobe of classic styles in neutral colors for a range of body types, which made it easy to find something to fit her current size. At the far end was a rack containing more colorful pieces like vinyl catsuits, crinoline skirts, bustiers in metallic fabrics, and dresses made of improbable materials. Christmas lights, duct tape, plastic shingles. Are these leftover Halloween costumes? As she changed into black jeans and a gray turtleneck, there was a knock on the bedroom door. Be right there, she called out. When she opened the door, her mouth fell open. Her mother stood before her, smiling a crooked, expectant smile. Una had anticipated wrinkles, frailty, gray hair, a stooped posture, but instead found a woman in leather pants and a low-cut sweater, brimming with bawdy vitality. How's my little time traveler? Madeline hugged her, enveloping her in a cloud of dark curly hair, periwinkle mohair, and Chanel No. 5, the same perfume she'd worn her entire life. A stunned silence gripped Una as she gawked at a woman who'd surely been trapped in amber. True, the decades had left some fingerprints on Madeline. They added a plumpness to her petite form, framed the mouth and eyes with lines, made her neck tendons more prominent. But her face was pulled tight, copper green eyes still bright, even if tilted at a new feline angle, eyebrows higher by a few degrees, lips fuller. And where Una covered up her older body, Madeline showed off ample cleavage, the loose skin of her bust line only faintly discernible. How is this possible? How do you look younger than me? Una put a hand to her face, as if she could read the mark of years like Braille. You're afraid of needles, my dear, to say nothing of knives. A kind chuckle at her daughter's perplexed expression. Plastic surgery. You frown upon it. I adore it. In fact, you've accused me of being a little obsessed with it. But look at me. You'd never think 68, would you? Madeline twirled around. I don't know what to think, period. Why weren't you here last night? I'm sorry, sweetheart, but you, 2014 you, thought it would be best that way. I may be well-preserved, but she, you, thought it might be frightening to see me older so soon, before you had a chance to read the letter and let it all sink in a bit. Goodness, I can't imagine how trying this first leap must be for you. Come, let's eat, and then we'll have a little adventure. Madeline stepped aside to reveal Kenzie in the hallway, bundled in a royal blue scarf. Good morning, he held out a lidded plastic cup.
Before you say or do anything else, try this.
Was it always going to feel this way? Like being thrust onto a treadmill, running to catch up as everyone around her calmly walked?
Una took a sip from the offered cup.
Coffee, but with a creamy, nutty flavor.
It's good. Soy latte. See? Not gross at all. He added with a wry smile. Plus, you don't have to worry about me breaking my robot coffee machine.
Una smiled back. The coffee and friendly faces added a normal patina to the morning, crammed the darker feelings away like closing an overflowing junk closet. It would all come tumbling out eventually, but the door would hold for now.
Mom just told me we're going to have a little adventure.
She graced Madeline with a quick eye roll.
Because when I woke up today, 32 years into my future, you know what I decided I needed most? Adventure.
Madeline swatted her shoulder.
You don't even know what it is.
A shake of her head, a look as if she were trying to find her daughter in a crowded room.
It's going to be like having a moody teenager again.
I am a teenager who just lost decades of my life, so excuse me if I'm a little moody.
Una rubbed the back of her neck. Her body ached like she'd slept on boulders, not on a high-end mattress.
You haven't lost decades, sweetie. Your life has just been rearranged.
You make me sound like living room furniture.
Forming his hands into a T, Kenzie stepped between them.
I have an idea. How about less arguing and more birthday brunching? I made a reservation for you two at Applewood. Understated, but just fancy enough.
You're not coming? Trying to hide her disappointment, she covered with,
not that I'd expect you to. You should take today off.
Oh. Warm surprise colored his cheeks.
I just thought you and your mother would want some time to
catch up on the last 3 decades? The idea of which made Una want to go back to bed.
I don't think I'm up for a fancy brunch right now. Maybe some toast in my fancy kitchen instead?
Fancy kitchen toast coming right up, he said.
It's bad enough I kept you up late last night. I can make it. Or have Mom show me how to use whatever high-tech contraption toasts bread nowadays.
The three went downstairs, and after checking to make sure Una didn't need anything else, Kenzie left, and the two women headed to the kitchen. Madeline took out a loaf of bread and some plates.
If it makes you feel any better, toasters haven't really changed.
That makes me feel so much better. Makes up for everything.
It wasn't intentional, this tendency toward sarcasm. Una never understood how her mother triggered it so easily.
So how are you handling everything so far?
Did you read the letter?
Yeah. And it doesn't mean anything. I could be insane, or have Alzheimer's, or...
She placed her hands on the kitchen island's cold granite, overcome.
Wake up, wake up, wake up!
But the stone was unyielding, and her mother's stroking the back of her head offered little comfort.
Listen, sweetheart. I know this is going to be a tough year for you. You told me so yourself last week.
But you can't remain in denial.
This is denial. How do I know you and Kenzie aren't trying to make me deny my true reality?
Why would we do that?
Maybe because...
The lump in her throat made it tough to dislodge the words.
Maybe soon I'll forget all of this anyway. Maybe it doesn't matter what you tell me. So you're taking the safe route. Trying to keep me from totally cracking up.
Madeline's head jolted back.
Does that sound like something I would do?
Take the safe route with you? If you recall, I've done everything to encourage you to take more risks. I'm the one who told you to give Dale a chance when you were uneasy about dating an aspiring musician. Who made you play hooky once in a while so we could go shopping? Who bought you clothes you said were too loud or too slutty?
The toaster clicked. The bread popped up. True. Una thought on this for a moment.
That was pretty messed up. Why would you do that?
You were always a cautious kid. But after Charles died, you walked around like the world was made of eggshells. So scared of making a misstep.
I'm scared to go on boats. I think that's understandable, seeing what happened to Dad.
It's more than that. I wanted you to be open to taking risks now and again.
Oh, like the kind of risk that made you get a fake birth certificate to land your dream job at Pan Am, only to lose it because you got knocked up at 17?
Her hand flew up to her mouth.
That was mean. I'm sorry.
An eyebrow twitch and a smirk.
Apology accepted. Yes, my teenage daughter is back, all right.
I didn't mean it. I wish I could make sense of all this.
Una closed her eyes and forced her brain to pluck a memory from the void of missing years. But no matter how much she strained to cast a light into the dark corners of her mind, the most recent time she could illuminate was the party at Dale's. And God, it was so vivid. The Christmas lights, the rough scales of her sequined dress, the astringent gel Dale used on his rockabilly pompadour, the whispery scratch of the Talk Talk record before the cascade of drum machines and synthesizers ushered in a string of Hey Hey Hey's. But when she opened her eyes, the scene before her was less vivid. The pale green kitchen, the cold counter, the smell of buttered toast, her mother calling her name.
Una, listen to me. Hard as it is to believe, you do still have your whole life ahead of you.
The toast was brittle and scratched the roof of her mouth as she chewed.
How would you even know?
Because you've hinted at things, fabulous things. Madeline's inflated lips curved into an enigmatic smile.
What things? Why ruin the surprise? You have some hardships ahead of you, but you also have some marvelous experiences on the horizon, ones that would be robbed of their wonder if I told you.
The plate screeched against the granite as Una pushed it away. Then just tell me the bad stuff, so I can avoid making the same mistakes again. Did I end up going to London? Was that a mistake? Tell me so I can choose the band next time. If this insanity is even real and I ever go back to the 80s.
Madeline shook her head.
It doesn't. You can't. You've learned not to play with your fate. Apart from the stock market, but maybe it's your fate to be wealthy.
I'm sorry, Una, but I have to respect your own wishes not to reveal your past or future.
Can you at least tell me about my tattoo?
I can't. An invisible hand tightened around Una's throat.
Why do my earlier self's wishes matter more than me in front of you right now?
Because that you is wiser. She's had more time to consider how to craft a meaningful life.
And because you once told me something about my future that hurt me deeply. I vowed I'd never do that to you.
Her mother looked away. The dish trembled in her hand.
I'm sure I didn't mean it. How strange to feel contrite for something impossible to recall.
Madeline rinsed off the plates.
It's fine now.
She turned back around.
Now let's take a break from finding order and do something a little wild.
We're two old ladies, Mom, both probably lacking in mental faculties.
Folding her arms across her chest, she shifted her weight to one leg, the pouty teenager pose at odds with her middle-aged body.
Wrong on both counts. Now stop sulking and open your birthday present.
Her mother handed her a flat package, its wrapping paper covered with antique clocks.
Nice touch on the wrapping. If I'd been attacked by a shark, would it have had a Jaws theme?
She tore into the thin cardboard box. Inside was a black, 50s-style halter-top bathing suit. Beneath that was a folded paper, a printout confirming a 2-week stay at the St. Regis Princeville Resort in Kauai.
We leave on Saturday. Might as well start the year in paradise, right?
Madeline winked.
What day is it today?
Thursday. Go try on the suit. You're going to need it for today's adventure.
Una's muddled mind struggled to process the exchange with her mother, though it had revealed little.
That's still happening, huh?
A serene yet mischievous grin played across Madeline's face.
Yes. Yes, it is.
And what kind of adventure are we talking about? Like the one in Coney Island when you forced me to ride the cyclone until I threw up? Or when you took me to see Pink Floyd and I had to babysit you while you tripped on acid? Or how about that adventure we had on my 16th birthday when you nearly gave me and my friends alcohol poisoning after spiking our punch? Do you mean one of those types of adventures?
Madeline's face glossed with the boredom of hearing the same grievances repeatedly.
Go put the suit on. Wear your other clothes over it.
Grumbling under her breath, Una did as she was told. 32 years of instant aging above the neck was one thing, and the weight gain was evident from the larger clothing sizes and her sense of the extra bulk. But this was the first real look she had at her body. Once she caught sight of her naked form, she couldn't keep from staring. In her youth, she hadn't been exactly thin, but her curves had been proportional, and she'd been comfortable with her fuller figure. It helped that her mother always told her that all bodies were beautiful, no matter their shape or size, no matter what the movies or magazines dictated. It helped that she was raised to expand her aesthetic boundaries and to value smarts over looks. And it helped now, when she felt like she was wearing someone else's heavy skin. Where she had once been shaped like a cello, she now pushed double bass proportions. 51 years old overnight, and she'd have to make peace with it somehow. Find beauty in the way she looked today.
Come on, Una, her mother called out. Adventure awaits!
Chapter 5. Madeline parked a few blocks from the boardwalk, removed a tote bag from the trunk, and led the way to Stillwell Avenue. Normally, I'd think nobody would be crazy enough to go to the beach in this weather, but I have you for a mother, so I shouldn't be surprised. There was no rebuttal, but Madeline's smirk was full of secrets. If you want to walk on the beach, that's fine, Una continued. It'll actually be nice to be somewhere quiet, by the water, away from people. But if you think I'm going to strip down and go swimming in January, well, I don't want to disappoint you, but it's not going to be quiet, Madeline interrupted. Huh? As if in response, a cacophony of hooting greeted them when they rounded the corner. The beach swarmed with people. The last time Una had been to the beach was with Dale, months ago, now decades in the past. After watching reruns of Carl Sagan's show Cosmos, Dale had become obsessed with astronomy and his greater place in the universe. Take all the beaches in all the world. He'd grabbed a handful of sand and let it seep through his fingers. And count all the grains of sand. I know, I know. The stars in the universe would still outnumber the grains of sand, Una finished for him. By a factor of 5 to 10. He held out a fingertip coated in sand, which Una blew on to disperse the granules. Okay, Sagan, you've made me feel tiny and insignificant. What's the point of being in a band, then? Or going to college? Or doing anything at all? That's all the more reason to make our mark on the world. Leave a legacy. A tug on Una's arm, and she was back in 2015. Come on, let's find a spot to leave our things, Madeline said. Surrounding them were thousands of people, cheering, dancing, laughing, jumping up and down. Most were in sensible winter wear, while others dressed in costumes ranging from superheroes to sea creatures. Then there were the people in swimsuits. Mom, this is not going to happen. Why would you bring me here? Madeline, a few steps ahead, turned around. I'm part of the Coney Island Polar Bear Club. We do this every Sunday from November to April. I wanted you to join me today. The New Year's Day Polar Bear Plunge is an annual tradition and open to non-members. I think you'll find it refreshing. I think you need something to wake you up. There was no point in resisting Madeline once she set her mind to something. A detached, floating sensation came over Una. She watched as if from the sidelines as she stripped off her clothes and shoes, put on the neoprene booties Madeline gave her, and allowed her mother to slather her with sunscreen. You can still get a sunburn even in these temperatures. Participants were split up into groups by color and giving corresponding wristbands. Una and Madeline were in the blue group, slated to swim first. I could let the tide carry me away. I'd be reunited with Dad and Dale. Needles of cold pricked Una's arms and legs. The towel she wrapped herself in helped little by way of warmth or modesty. It didn't matter. She wasn't getting many looks from the crowd. Not the way the bikini-clad younger women were. I was one of them only yesterday. Now I'm practically invisible. Maybe that's it. Maybe I'm not here at all.
You're probably thinking the water will be freezing, but it might actually feel a bit warm because the air is colder. Her mother continued a cheerful patter about how awake and alive these swims made her feel, as Una stared at the horizon, a sheet of white broken up by the undulating gray line of the Atlantic Ocean. It's almost time. Try to relax your mind and body as you go in, her mother said. Pretend it's a hot August day and you're taking a dip to cool off. The more you can put yourself at ease, the more you'll enjoy it.
Yes, how lovely to pretend, to revert to those summers with Dale. Yet the fantasy was like a vinyl record. It would play out only so long before it ended and needed to be flipped. She'd never been susceptible to nostalgia before. She tried to believe the future held better things than the past. Is this what it means to get older? Replaying happy memories because the best times are behind you? Before long, the blue group was called forward. They charged the water, whooping and splashing. Una let herself be carried forward by the people, then by the tide. Her mother was right. The water was warmer than she expected, but it still stabbed at her.
Splash some on your wrists and neck, Madeline urged. The sooner your pulse points acclimate, the sooner the rest of your body will.
If only acclimating were that easy. Una waded farther out and dove into the water. Maybe if she swam far enough, she'd drown or get washed onto a shore where time hadn't taken such a big bite out of her life. But the waves resisted, pushed her back where her feet could touch the ground. The real cold didn't hit until she was out of the water, when icy winds chilled Una bone deep.
The car has seat warmers, so we'll be nice and toasty before you know it, Madeline shouted over the noisy crowd.
She led the way off the beach, taking several solo steps before she circled back to her daughter, who was rooted in place with her head bent down.
What's the matter?
Una gazed at the sand at her feet, not thinking of planets or stars, or of being young or old or average or extraordinary. She tried to hold on to the numbing effects of the winter swim, even as each shiver commanded her to feel something.
What is it, Una?
If only she could rush back into the ocean and fight against her natural buoyancy. But the tide had navigated her here, so she had to say it out loud. Una took in a jagged breath and forced the words from her mouth.
Dale is dead.
Una came home bundled in reticent sorrow and went upstairs to her bedroom inconsolable.
I'm so sorry. I thought the swim would invigorate you. I shouldn't have pushed, Madeline said through the closet door as Una changed into dry clothes.
Do I still have it? Running a hand across the garments suspended from the long rack, Una paced the length of the walk-in until her fingers brushed against the jacket Dale had given her. She pulled it off its hanger. The leather was more pliant all these years later, soft and weathered, the black material now shaded with gray. Its rich scent was also faded, though still prevalent, with notes of cedar and cinnamon. Years of wear and exposure had made it only more beautiful. But she was unable to get her arm all the way through the sleeve. Her armor no longer fit her. When Una emerged from the closet, clutching the jacket to her chest, she stepped around her mother and made straight for the bed, slipped beneath the covers without a word. Let me go make you some tea. Una buried her head in a pillow, hugged the leather tight, and closed her eyes. It was easy to ignore the cups of tea and bowls of soup brought to her in the ensuing days. It was easy to turn Kenzie's and Madeline's concerned murmurs into ocean roars and drift away into a dreamless darkness. And when she woke, it was easy to dismiss the iridescent wall before her. All she had to do was shut her eyes. Maybe I'll sleep the year away. In the blackness, a sweet-voiced soundtrack played, urged on the slumber. A candy lullaby sending a little boat off to stormy seas. No matter that her boat had already capsized, that the water had frozen with her beneath it, she preferred submersion.
Wake up!
No.
You must wake up!
Must I? Reluctant, her eyelids fluttered open. The room was empty. What was this music? Disjointed, melancholy, a soaring voice filled with longing and regret. Where was it coming from? Una's head felt so heavy, a steel globe, the pillow a magnet. Sleep, the tide, quick to seduce and pull her under, her cherished leather jacket more anchor than life vest. Yet the music dragged her to shore, pleaded for her to rise. Inertia fought a tug of war with melody, and the latter prevailed. It coaxed her to a sitting position, released her grip on the jacket, drew aside the blanket, tugged her to her feet. It commanded her to stop drowning. A lap of the room revealed the source of the music on a glass shelf. A white device slimmer than a pack of cards, a vein of wire, the sound projected from tiny speakers camouflaged in the corners. Beside the device, a note.
Take a shower. Get dressed. Come downstairs. K.
One last glance at the shipwreck of her bed. It was time to find her land legs. She showered. She got dressed. She went downstairs. The scent permeating the kitchen wasn't coffee or tea. It was something more complex. Spicy winter treats hidden in the woods.
Chai. And that's portable.
Kenzie handed her an aluminum mug with a screw-on lid.
Are we having an adventure? Because if I'm getting pushed out of a plane today, I'm going back to bed.
A soft snicker.
We're just going for a walk. I think Madeline overestimated your tolerance for adventure. I promise we'll keep it low-key.
She took a sip of the warm liquid. Surprised delight allayed her suspicion.
Yum.
I know, right?
A conspiratorial grin as he held up a plastic bag.
I also got us eclairs. It's impossible to hate life after a good eclair, and these are the best. Let's get our coats.
The sweetness on her tongue turned sour.
Hawaii. Mom planned a whole trip for us.
Postponed. Don't worry about it. And if you're not ready then, I'll take your place.
He winked.
Is she mad?
Of course not. She's gonna meet us for lunch after Zumba.
At her puzzlement, he added,
It's a dance aerobics thing. I figured you'd prefer a quiet park to a room full of middle-aged women sweating to loud Latin music. Of course, I could be wrong.
There was an impish glimmer in his eyes. Maybe it was the lingering effects of the music, or the serene way he regarded her that said, You can do this. Or maybe it was his sweater that resembled teal cotton candy and begged to be touched. Regardless, Una set down her mug and gave him a long hug. What a relief. The sweater was as soft as it was bright. An even bigger relief that he hugged her back. They walked through Prospect Park, following the track down to the lake. A fallen log provided a makeshift picnic bench where they ate their eclairs, watching ducks and geese float and waddle along.
So, do you hate life a little less now?
I think it's going to take more than French pastry for that.
But thanks for trying,
Una said.
What was that music playing in my room?
Ah, the Ninth Wave. The second side of Kate Bush's Hounds of Love album. A concept piece about a girl stranded at sea.
I've never heard anything like it.
Actually, you have, but, you know.
The corner of his mouth twitched up.
It's a friggin' masterpiece. Came out in 1985. There's a lot of great music for you to catch up on.
A stirring within her. A hunger after all the days in bed. But not for food. For something intangible. Something momentarily satiated by the music. Maybe that's what I'll do then. Instead of spending the year sleeping, I'll spend it listening to music.
It doesn't have to be one thing, you know.
I should see a doctor, she murmured into her travel mug. I might be sick.
You're not sick. If you want to get a checkup, get some tests done, we can do that. But doctors won't find anything.
I still don't believe it.
The world doesn't care what you believe.
He raised a finger to placate her.
Sorry if that sounds harsh. I care, of course, and your mom cares. But the world is gonna carry on whether you spend the year moping in bed or exploring it.
Don't I have good reason to mope? What am I besides old and useless?
You're not old or useless.
You're rich and generous.
And you have more of your mother's rebellious streak than you think, regardless of age.
Una slapped her thighs and stood, returned to the track with brisk steps. You know how messed up it is to be told what you're like by someone who's a stranger to you? She picked up the pace, ignoring the twinges in her joints. Not as messed up as wondering if what's happening to you is actually happening. Every time I go to sleep, I pray I'll wake up from this nightmare, a teenager again, with Dale beside me.
If that's what you want, I hope that happens.
Oh, come on, don't be condescending. However much I've changed in the last 30 years, I'm sure I still have a low tolerance for bullshit. His bewildered laugh curled around them like a ribbon. What's so funny? She asked.
It's nice to see moments of my old friend. It's not entirely you, and yet it's still you.
Her pinched heart sent a sharp volt through her, demanded more room to expand. How gracious for him to persist and sidestep her barbs. How did we meet, anyway?
It's a long story. We bonded over music. I promised not to tell you more than that.
No spoilers, air quotes and a smirk. Right?
That's right.
What about the girl lost at sea?
What girl?
In that Kate Bush album. She cast her stinging eyes up to the sky, which was white as paper. Does she ever get rescued?
She does,
came the reply. Earnest, firm.
She definitely does.
Chapter 6. It would be a difficult year for Una, though she'd do what she could to make it better. The money helped, as money often does. The financial cushion was welcome, but it also felt like a lawsuit settlement or insurance payout for whatever accident or act of God resulted in those years lost. At least any struggles awaiting her wouldn't be monetary. But being able to buy anything put a spotlight on the things that couldn't be bought. Lost friendship, lost love, lost time. Human nature being prone to focus on what was lacking. Hoping to find a medical cause for the missing years, Una got a full medical workup. Apart from the extra weight, she was fine in health, and a brain scan revealed no abnormalities. She considered a psychiatrist, but heeded the letter's warning not to reveal her true condition to others. Better to be insane in the comfort of her home than a mental hospital. And what a home it was. Vast, but designed for comfort. There was a rec room with classic arcade video games and pinball machines. There was a home theater with red velvet couches and a projection screen across an entire wall. But her favorite was the music room, with its shag carpeting, beanbag chairs, and massive stereo. Custom shelving housed a staggering collection of vinyl, and the opposite wall held guitars that had belonged to Lou Reed, David Gilmour, Prince, David Bowie, and other music legends. At first, reverence kept her from touching them. But after a few days, she grew emboldened and took a turn at each guitar. She strummed chords and picked out melodies the way Dale had shown her on his own guitar. Imagined stadiums full of cheering fans and intimate recording sessions. It lifted her up and up and up, until a stab of guilt sent her plummeting down. She returned the guitar to its spot on the wall. The guitar is Dale's instrument. Keyboards were mine. Yet there were no pianos or keyboards in the house, and her fingers thirsted to strum and pluck and pick at guitar strings anyway. But what if? No, it would be disloyal to Dale. She vowed to keep the instruments as nothing more than a display, a dream out of reach. In the days that followed, Una wandered through her house like a marble rolling around an empty box, often retreating to the music room. Despite her extensive record collection, she fixated on that one side of that one Kate Bush album, played over and over. She'd lie on the floor and pretend the carpet was an ocean, close her eyes, and wait for stormy seas to carry her away. Until one day, the music stopped mid-song. When she sat up, Kenzie was standing beside the silenced record player, a laptop under one arm.
"Mind if I sit?"
Without waiting for an answer, he dropped onto the carpet beside her and opened up the computer.
"I want to show you something."
"If it's another cat playing the piano, I'll pass."
"No, it's your music collection."
"I can see it from here." She gestured to her record shelves.
"That's only part of it. There's more in here."
After a few taps on the keyboard, he turned the screen toward her.
"This is your iTunes library. That's the total number of songs you own."
42,000?
"And is this how long it would take me to listen to all of them? 124 days?
A film of sweat broke out on her forehead.
"Yeah, and look, you can play any song just by clicking on it."
With the push of a button, jangly guitars filled the room, followed by a man's sultry croon. Una's eyes darted to the corner speakers.
"It's like some kind of magic trick.
Hey, is this Roxy Music?"
"Brian Ferry. He's released some great solo albums since your time. And not just him."
He spent the next few minutes showing her the basics of digital music.
"I still don't know where to begin."
A trill of alarm in her voice.
"With any of it." "All right, step away from the panic attack. Breathe with me,"